Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Emad McKay, who's an Egyptian journalist currently writing for Al Jazeera and Interpress Service, who is a senior fellow at the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California at Berkeley. Welcome to Background Briefing, Emad McKay.
Thank you.
And it does seem that the release of Hosni Mubarak from jail, flown into a military hospital, it seems as if at least this could be a sign that the military is rolling back the changes that followed from the original uprising 2 years ago. What's your response to it?
Yes, no, it definitely is the military are rolling back the most of the good, positive outcome of the initial uprising against the Mubarak regime that started in January 2011. But in fact, they have been building up to that point for the past 6 weeks since they started their coup. Most of the people who have opposed Mubarak in the past were, in part, Muslim Brotherhood and a couple of other liberal activists, including the famous Ayman politician Ayman Moore, who ran against Mubarak presidential election before. These have all been hunted down by the military. Some of them were arrested indeed and thrown out of prison, and others like Ayman Noor, who remain out of the country and cannot come back for fear of being arrested. So the release of Mubarak indeed is the last part of what has been a return of his regime, sort of the return of Mubarakism without Mubarak, if you will. And in fact, the military did receive some backlash over the announcement that he was being released. Initially, it was the order was that he would be placed under house arrest, and the military changed that to send him to a military hospital to try to mitigate the effect of the court's decision to release him.
And Emad McKay, has the crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood and the ousting, the violent removal of them from the sit-ins in Cairo, is that succeeded, or do you believe that the call that the Muslim Brotherhood has for this coming Friday, calling it a Friday of Martyrs, where they want people to demonstrate, is that likely to bring anybody out, given what happened recently?
Right. The way the military went about cracking down on the sit-ins and dispersing the protesters was very violent. It was unexpectedly violent that I do not think, and again, this is based on talking to many people in Egypt and following social media very, very closely. The way the went about dispersing the protesters in itself caused others to join the protesters. It was so violent and so bloody that so many people were shocked. I, for one, know members of the Egyptian Press Syndicate who were anti-Morsi. But they were rattled by the ferociousness of the military crackdown on dissent and on opposition in general, that I have heard him recently regretting supporting the coup in the first place. So that brings us to the point where I think there might be some traction to the call for more protests against the coup. That said, the military are playing a very dangerous game. They think the more bloodshed the spell on they create around Egypt, the more fear they will instill among the public and among the opposition. So we still have to wait whether violence, more crackdown, more repression will indeed succeed in crushing the protest.
Now, this week, there were planned amendments to the Constitution that were leaked to the media, and they appear to be really roll back the revolution, the 2011 revolution, placing limits on political parties and easing restrictions on the participation of Mubarak-era officials in politics. Now, what do you make of these leaks? Are they the military. I mean, all along they've sort of been wolves in sheep's clothing, haven't they? They've said that the original coup was not a coup, that this was this month of martial law would be over, and then we'd get back to democracy. And they've made appeals to the Muslim Brotherhood to re-enter the political process, but at the same time. They appear, at least if these leaks to the press are accurate, they appear to want to change the constitution to ensure their return.
Oh, absolutely. The main reason why the military did finally decide to act so publicly against Mohamed Morsi was not because, as they said, it's a concern over democracy and that Mohamed Morsi was against the democratic transition in Egypt. In fact, the real reason why the military complex decided to overthrow Morsi was that over the last few months of his presidency, he started to look into the finances of the military. He started to try to impose some checks and balances on how they conduct business. We have a sprawling empire of lots of business interests. Like they have pasta factories. They have cookies factories. It's a very sprawling complex. They have farms for like milk on sale. It's a very complicated complex. Not to mention the commissions, the kickbacks they get out of arms sales. Like all the arms sales that come to Egypt, many of the generals get kickbacks over these. And there are court documents here in the U.S. that show that some of U.S. companies had in the past paid bribes to Egyptian generals. So the only atmosphere where they worked with impunity was under Mubarak, and not just him as a person, but a system, like an entire system, where the judiciary has been co-opted, the police force do not make such a big fuss over who's getting what bribed, because they too are into bribes. There are no really serious parliament to question those contracts and or overseas transactions. So they are trying to bring back that kind of atmosphere where they thrive financially. Under Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood, there were so many political players around, and the public was energized, part of the revolution against Mubarak. And part of it was to try and ask questions, where the money is going, which budget is bigger than which budget. Part of that scrutiny was directed towards the military and part of it towards the Egyptian Christian church, who had also kept its finances hidden away from the public eye for so many years. And that caused this angst among the military and the leadership of the Christian Coptic church. And eventually they came up with a coup. And that's what the military is trying to restore right now, a system where nobody can interfere in their own business and how they handle money.
So Emad McKay, are you suggesting that the Tamarod movement is a fraud? That all of the objections that millions of Egyptians had to Morsi's rule, and all of the reports about him being boneheaded, inflexible, a religious zealot who. Was putting his own hacks into power. None of that's true. I mean, when you talk about the Christian Coptic Church's finances, what do the Christian Coptic Church finances have to do with the government and the military?
Right. No, I'm not suggesting that was a hoax or that there was not enough opposition to what Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood were doing, partly on ideological grounds and partly on what actually happened. But from day one, Morsi was not elected by a majority. It's only 51%, around that. And he lost in Cairo. So we know that his base was not in Cairo. So when the June 30th protests came out, it was to be expected. These were mostly people from Cairo and were mostly people from the Christian Coptic minority and the families of the police force who were bracing for drastic changes in the police force under Morsi, and certainly the military and their families. And Ian, remember, there's something major that that actually happens in Egypt and not too many people notice in the West. The military has a huge army of conscripts. These are people who work for free. They don't have to go serve in the army if they are over the age of 18. And these move at the orders of their superiors. So what I'm saying, during the June 30th, there was part of it was staged. Part of it was manufactured by the military. Part of it was exaggerated by the media that still is very much in bed with the military. So they did use some of the very legitimate grievances by some people among the public to stage this whole show that produced the June 30th protests. I know that sounds skeptical, but I'm a reporter, and that's my job, is to try to question what's going on. And to me, that's what happened. The Egyptian intelligence is one of the most effective in the Middle East. And if I can digress a little bit, just to hammer the point to your audience and just help them understand what goes on. In the 1973 war, when Egypt launched a war to push back the Israeli troops that were in the Sinai, the way they did it was not because they were more powerful than the Israelis, which was still backed by the U.S. at the time, but they adopted the deception ideology, an ideology that would co-opt the enemy, just make them very relaxed, and then make their move. One of the things that they did, they ordered the Egyptian troops on the other side of the Suez Canal to wash their white underwear and hang it on lines and make it very visible for the Israelis to show them that they are relaxed. There's no strike at this minute. The Egyptians will never go to war. But eventually they did, and they managed to push back the Israelis 15 kilometers back into the Sinai. Now, why I'm telling you this is because that was the date when deception became a major part of the Egyptian intelligence and the Egyptian military ideology. And because of that, we've seen Assisi, the general Assisi, pretending to be a religious man, quoting the Quran and referring to Prophet Muhammad in his speeches when he was under Morsi. What that led to was Morsi feeling relaxed and feeling okay about Assisi being in office. Also brings me to the idea of the military being able to stage some of the most difficult sort of scenes you can imagine. I was sent an email by a former military attaché, very politely asking if I could circulate among my friends, meaning my foreign correspondent friends, because this is what I do, scenes of the June 30th protest. That signals to me that this is a PR campaign. They want people to notice those numbers. Those are not, if that was a natural revolution, you wouldn't have to ask a reporter or someone to pass on videos to their contacts or their friends. There is a push to prove that that was a revolution and that the military responded to public will.
So, Imad McKay, again, Egyptian journalist currently writing for Al Jazeera Interpress Services and a senior fellow at the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California at Berkeley. You mentioned, though, the Christian Coptic Church's finances being a part of the military deceit and operation and this coup and this attempt to go back to the old order. I understand that the richest man in Egypt is a Coptic Christian. He runs One TV, which is a very pro-military television propaganda operation. But, you know, 57 Coptic churches were burned recently in backlash and apparently at the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. So I don't understand what the finances of a church have to do with the government.
Oh, let me explain that to you. I may not be able to make myself very clear. I did not say that the Christian Coptic Church finance were part of the coup. what I was citing is some of the reasons why the Egyptian Coptic Church, the clergy, the leadership of the church, was not happy about the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi taking over. Under Morsi, members of parliament, feeling for the first time the breath of the breeze of democracy, had wanted to bring lots of institutions under parliamentary scrutiny, and the military finances was one of them, and the Egyptian Christian Church finances was one of them. They wanted to impose some sort of checks and balances on how the clergy handles their own finances. And there were proposals. There were never a law that was passed that would require that, but there were discussions. And the clergy came out very strongly against them in media interviews, in statements, and they signaled that that was serious. Now, the Egyptian Christian Coptic Church clashed with Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood over a number of other issues, including the security, that they felt that the Muslim Brotherhood and the government did not secure their churches and places of worship well enough. They were worried that there might be laws in the future that would make it easier for Christians to convert to Islam without going back, reverting back for consultation with the church. There's a whole number of issues. But one of the strongest issues that really alarmed the clergy was that now you had an elected government that wanted to look into our financial books and find out where we spend our money and so forth. So it's natural, it was automatic for the church to oppose Morsi. And the coup leaders would never tell you publicly that they did that because they're worried about their own finances. Naturally, they would say we did it for democracy. We did it for the sake of the Egyptian people. We did it to save lives. No one who has committed something that is obviously against the Constitution and against the law would admit they've done it. They had to find a cover. And that was the cover, the right. Means of democracy.
Right, but surely, Imad, if you tried to go after if a government in Italy tried to go after the Vatican's finances, if the U.S. government in any way, there's such a strict separation of church and state here. I mean, I don't see what the reason a government has to question and investigate the finances of a church. That in itself doesn't seem justified, and there's so many examples of Coptic churches being burned. It would seem to me that the Coptic Christian minority has every reason in the world to be concerned about their own security.
They certainly are, and that's what's actually their concern proved right after the fall of Morsi. Many of his supporters, some of them are Muslim Brotherhoods, and some of them just ordinary citizens who are upset for the role played by the church. I want you to reimagine the scene of the coup, the day General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi announced his coup. He stood up there on the pulpit, and on his left side hand, he had the Sheikh of Al-Azhar, which is the Sunni Islam faction of Islamic education in Egypt, and the Pope of the Christian Coptic Church. That clearly sent a message that the Christian Coptic Church was supportive of the coup.
Sure, he had the Al-Nur people too, the Salafis standing next to him, right?
Al-Nur Salafis are an Egyptian branch of the Saudi Wahhabi branch.
But they were standing next to Sisi along with the Coptic Pope, weren't they?
They were, yes. Yeah. Both the Sunni leader of Al-Azhar University and the Nur Party and the Christian Coptic Pope were all there, and along with the military, and representing the secularist liberals with Mohammed al-Baradei. So there was a host of a number of concerned parties that did support the coup. One of them was the Egyptian Christian Coptic Church. The reasons why they clashed with the Muslim Brotherhood are numerous. One of them is the finances. That's not the only one, but that's the one that really created a major backlash that was not very well detected here in the Western press, but it's all over the place in the Arabic press. It's not an easy issue. People do not want to admit that is a problem, that the government of Egypt under Morsi wanted to look in into the finances of the Christian Coptic Church, and that the church didn't like that much.
Well, Imad McKay, I thank you so much for joining us here today, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Imad McKay, who's an Egyptian journalist currently writing for Al Jazeera and Interpress Service. He's a senior fellow at the Investigative Reporting Program at the University of California at Berkeley. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about President Obama's bus tour to cut college costs while doing nothing about the for-profit college racket.